All right, now it's time for a trip to the barbershop. That's where we gather a group of interesting folks to talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Joining us for a shape-up today are Ken Rudin. He is a longtime political analyst. He's host of a radio show called Ken Rudin's Political Junkie. Hi, Ken.
Hello, Michelle. What is Aleppo? I'm sorry, I thought I was doing Gary Johnson.
Exactly. Sorry. Not your turn yet. Gail Trotter is a conservative commentator based here in Washington, D.C. Gail, welcome back to you.
Great to be with you, Michelle.
And Faraji Muhammad is the host of Listen Up. That's a radio show on member station WEAA in Baltimore. He's also director of a youth organization, Peace by Peace. Welcome back to you too, Faraji.
Thank you, Michelle.
So let me start with this. Over a month, we're about a month out since the election, and Donald Trump is still tweeting up a storm. This week, he made ripples by tweeting about the potential projected costs of revamping Air Force One. He also singled out a union leader who questioned Donald Trump's math on a number of jobs he claimed to have saved at that carrier plant in Indiana. That's the one that makes the heating and air conditioning equipment, and that resulted in a wave of angry calls toward the man, angry, you know, threats. And all of this has brought back concerns about the president-elect's fondness for Twitter and the unintended or perhaps their intended consequences. I'm not quite sure, particularly when it's directed at, you know, at private citizens. So, Gail, you're the Trump supporter in the House. We'll start with you on this. What do you think about that? Is this a problem or not?
It's not a problem. Donald Trump is using the most recent media that he has to get out to the American people. I would say that these are his fireside tweets, taking from President Roosevelt, who used a new medium of radio when he was president to get his message directly out to the American people. And it's great because Donald Trump, through Twitter, can bypass the mainstream media, and he speaks with his authentic voice. He's not using a committee. Many people said, won't somebody take his iPhone from him so he won't be making these tweets in the middle of the night? But this is why people like him. I've heard many Trump supporters tell me, we feel like he is speaking personally to us through Twitter.
All right, Ken, what do you think about this?
Well, I understand why he's doing it. Obviously, you know, Donald Trump has never trusted the media. The media has shown, obviously, they treat him in kind. And by tweeting, he bypasses the media. And that all makes sense to me. But I don't remember President Roosevelt ever attacking Saturday Night Live. In other words, the attacks are the things he does. Yes, he does have a microphone.
Well, maybe because it wasn't there then. I'm just saying.
Could be one reason.
You know.
That could be one reason.
Accuracy compels me to point out it didn't exist.
Thank you, Michelle. Although I'm sure you were there.
I didn't think of that, but what I did think of is that he does not.
But I take your point about private. Well, let's take Saturday Night Live, because they have a lot of people to make phone calls for them and to answer their phones and to get their coffee and whatever. But, you know, what about, you know, private citizens who don't like some college student in New Hampshire, or what about that?
Well, exactly. What about that 18-year-old girl? Washington Post did a great story about this. The 18-year-old girl who stood up to President-elect Trump and said that, you know, how do you feel about women? And then he replied that you're nasty and you're arrogant. And then suddenly she got bombarded by all of his followers with hate tweets that did not stop for a year.
Okay. Faraji, what about you?
You know, I don't think, I mean, first, He, Donald Trump is the president-elect, so he does not have the, he needs to be held accountable in his tweets. And I think that if he puts out these personal tweets then and not under the official White House Twitter account, then that just keeps him in a place where he doesn't have to feel like he's going to be held accountable about what he says. His tweets shape policy, and his tweets shape opinion and perception. And at this point, we don't need to have two Twitter accounts. We need to have one, because now Donald Trump has now taken on this role as the president. And as this role, that's what you are for the next 4 years. You're not.
Well, not yet. Not yet. Not till January.
So
that's the part of the question here. Still, he is not president yet. And so he's still, for all intents and purposes, a private citizen.
You know what, Michelle, just in the case with the union worker, I mean, he puts out this number of 1,100.
Union president, let me put in there. It was a president. It wasn't just a regular worker.
Yeah, but the union president, excuse me. And the thing is, he put out this number that he saved 1,100 jobs when, in fact, it was 730. He didn't give credit to his own running mate, Governor Pence, about, you know, really helping to broker that deal in Indiana. And so it's like, again, you're putting yourself out there with no real accountability.
But isn't the tool of accountability elections? Isn't the tool of accountability elections?
Yes. And at the same time, and when you have this type of platform and you use it and just use it without any type of restrictions or guidelines or regulations, it can become very dangerous when you are the president-elect.
But he's the anti-regulation guy. That's the beauty of it. That's why his supporters love it, because they don't want him boxed in. They don't want him part of the Washington elite. They want to drain the swamp, and he's the guy to do it.
Well, let's talk about some of the alleged swamp residents, or future swamp residents, if we want to sort of call it that.
Okay. Swamp
dollars. So the president-elect tweeted this morning that the former mayor of New York, Rudy Giuliani, has pulled out of the running for Secretary of State. And now there are reports that ExxonMobil CEO Rex Tillerson is going to be Trump's pick. I want to give NBC credit for this. They were the first to report this. NPR has not independently confirmed it. We don't expect a formal announcement until next week, but it's certainly a different name than has been bandied around. So, Ken Rudin, why don't I go to you first on this? So what do you say about that?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of things to talk about everything he's picked for the cabinet. You know, it's interesting how he knew more than the generals, and yet we have generals who can head up the Department of Defense and all these different entities and organizations. But regarding Rex Tillerson, and I, what's interesting about this to me is that not only is he, I think, a climate change denier, or at least we know how he feels about the environment as being the CEO of ExxonMobil, but more importantly, he has a very close personal business relationship with Vladimir Putin. And when you have the combination of Tillerson plus General Flynn, who's going to be his national security advisor, with close relationships with Putin, while, as we heard from Mary Louise Kelly earlier in your show, you know, as Russia is being blamed for hacking into the election system and clearly trying to get their favorite candidate to be winning, that is going to be clearly a conflict, not only between Trump and the rest of the country, Trump and the Republican Party.
Well, I don't know that Rex Tillerson is a climate change denier. I know that's, I mean, because you're for fossil fuels or because you make your living in fossil fuels, I don't know that that means you're a climate change denier. We do think that Scott Pruitt, the Oklahoma Attorney General, who has been nominated to be or would be under the leadership of the EPA, has been described as a climate change skeptic. But there's also this whole thing about the transition team circulating a questionnaire asking who has worked on climate science and not. And, you know, for a lot of people, that seems like a witch hunt, Gail.
Or the opposite. You might remember that in the first week after he was elected president, Barack Obama said, "Elections have consequences. I won." And if the American people want to have a voice and have elections actually matter for something, when you put new leadership in, not just somebody from the same party, but from the other party, they want to know what's going on at the agencies. They're going to have new priorities. They're going to have new policy initiatives. And how can any new leadership going into any organization be able to take over if they don't know the projects that are going on, who's in charge of the projects, what the money is that's being spent? And if Donald Trump isn't able to go in and actually change these agencies, then it gives a lie to the fact that we're able to change anything and hold anybody accountable in Washington.
Farhaji, what do you think?
Well, again, I mean, if we're looking at this, all of the appointments, my big question is, what will the poor and the middle class of this country have in terms of its leadership? You have a lot of these big CEOs from Goldman Sachs, ExxonMobil, and so many different places. And these, let's be very real about this, is a privileged white men. And so at this point, what about the poor? What about the middle class? Even if you're looking at the poor coming out of Virginia, Michigan, there was a great article another periodical just did in terms of why those folks in the poor in Virginia, Michigan, Pennsylvania had decided to vote for Trump, because they said essentially for change, they're expecting jobs and whatnot. But at the end of the day, his administration does not reflect the diverse population of this country, and his administration does not really seem to be all about the poor and the middle class, where the rest of America is. There's only a small percentage of Americans that are making the type of money that a Goldman Sachs CEO will make or ExxonMobil CEO will make.
Can I ask Gail about this really briefly? What about that question?
Sure, I didn't want to interrupt, but
no,
I thought Nikki Haley might disagree. She's a daughter of Indian immigrants, and she's been appointed to the UN, and if she goes through the confirmation process.
Yeah, but she's not working on domestic policy. I mean, she's at the United Nations. I mean,
it's part of his cabinet. It's part of his inner circle of people that he's selecting. And I think the reason why his message resonated with the very populations that you're talking about is because he wants to bring everybody together and create jobs and unleash our economy so that people have jobs.
No,
the policies do.
Can I jump in just quickly?
Go ahead, Ken.
Let me just jump in quickly. And what I agree with Gail about, I mean, you know, everyone, when Tom Price was a Congressman, Tom Price was nominated to be the Secretary of HHS, everybody said, oh no, he's going to get rid of Obamacare. Donald Trump campaigned on getting repealing Obamacare. So for all the reactions to the Betsy DeVos's and the Jeff Sessions and the Tom Price's of the world, who Donald Trump has named to the cabinet, this is what he campaigned on. So for people to be suddenly so astonished that he's going in that direction, to me, misreads the entire election.
All right, let me just take a couple minutes to end on a slightly different note, but it still has to do with voting. That's my hard turn, and I will leave you to decide whether it's a turn right or left. I won't decide. So the Grammy nominations, Beyonce and Adele led this year's nominations. They'll be headed for Rush. I can't decide if he's fainting or not. They're facing off in all the big categories: Record of the Year, Album of the Year, Song of the Year. Do we have time to play a little bit? All right, just have a little taste. Hello from the other side. I must have called a thousand times. Let's go out. I go hard. Yeah, what's mine? All right, Faraji.
Yes.
Beehive.
Oh,
or Camp
yes.
Adele.
I have to be a Beehive member because my wife is. So if I want to.
Because you want to go home.
Right, exactly. No, I think this is a big category, big situation. I mean, Adele and Beyonce, these are like titans right now. But I think they do have some of the strongest albums of the year. I'm really kind of up in the air because I actually like both albums.
Ty. Okay, Ty. We'll keep it from your wife. We won't let her know. We'll keep that part secret. Gail, you're rocking out to both. I saw you rocking out. So Beehive or Camp Adele?
So Beyonce lost a lot of fans this year when she went campaigning for Hillary Clinton and came out against law enforcement. And I was not an Adele fan until I went to her concert at the Verizon Center in D.C. like a month ago. And she made some anti-Trump comments, too. So neither of them have clean hands on that. But I would have to go.
I don't think Adele's a citizen, though. And having been to the Beyonce concert, I did not see any loss of fans. Confession. Seemed kind of crowded. Just saying. Okay, so you're what?
I'm torn.
You're torn. You're equally.
I'm going for the Beehive. Though.
You're going to go on for. Okay, Ken. Tiebreaker.
Michelle, I'll be honest with you. I don't really follow current popular music. I thought you were talking about Adele Castro. So I'm really not really part of this whole thing.
Yeah, Frank Sinatra's not up for anything, Ken. Really? Sorry. Or Mozart, for that matter. I don't think he is either, which was your era, as I recall. Okay.
No, well, I knew Mozart, and yes. He was a friend of mine. You are no Mozart.
True that. Well, Ken Rudin is a political analyst and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie. Gail Trotter is a conservative columnist here in Washington, D.C., also a blogger right on D.C.?
Right in D.C.
Right in D.C., absolutely. And Faraji Muhammad is the host of Listen Up. That's a radio show on member station WEAA in Baltimore. Also director of a youth organization, Peace by Peace. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Great.
Thank you.
With you.
Thank you, guys.